Thanks for joining us. Today I'm speaking to Andrew Macken, who is the Chief Investment Officer of Montaka Global Investments. Andrew, really good to talk to you.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
Now, as a fund manager, you would be applying a whole range of disciplines to the market volatility that we're seeing at the moment. How does the average person make sense of what's going on in the markets at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, that's a difficult question because there is so much going on. And I guess the way I describe how we think about the world is to not try to predict what's going to happen. I feel like a lot of investors tie themselves up in knots trying to think about, you know, what will happen tomorrow or next year or the year after. Instead, we try to think about what could happen and then try to think about how likely those scenarios are. It's particularly difficult at the moment because if you think about all the different possibilities that could play out in the world right now, and if you think there's Brexit going on, there's various tweets coming out from a certain president in the United States.
They can be instrumental in affecting prices.
They can move markets, absolutely. Yeah. There are issues up in Hong Kong and up in China. So there's actually a very wide range of possible outcomes at the moment. And that does make investors' life difficult.
Yep.
If you knew what was going to happen, even if what was going to happen was negative, you could actually position your portfolio to make money off that.
Yep.
It's when there's a wide range of possible outcomes that that makes life more difficult. And now you might say, well, should investors just sit on the sidelines and just sit this one out?
Yep.
That's a really dangerous game to play as well today because interest rates are low and falling. Yep. And, you know, we are in a situation today where sitting in cash could actually be the most dangerous decision you could make.
So you mentioned those falling interest rates, and they are obviously a reflection of the moderating growth that we're seeing throughout the world. And this new plunge lower in interest rates makes it very difficult because anything that generates an income or a return is quite pricey. Is that a reasonable point of view?
That is. And actually, let me take a step back because I think there's still a large number of investors out there who believe this is just a cyclical thing, and maybe they're right.
Yeah.
We actually take a different view. You know, for us, if you think about the last 10 years since the GFC, interest rates have been falling. We've been experiencing emergency monetary policy settings all around the world, so quantitative easing, these sorts of things all around the world. But for the last 10 years, everybody thought it was temporary. Okay, everybody thought this was just post-GFC situation and eventually things will normalise.
Yeah.
Then throughout the end of 2018, fourth quarter of 2018, interest rates in the US went up and the whole world started to implode. So we actually believe that what's changed is that slowly but surely investors are considering the possibility that this is not temporary.
Yeah.
And actually interest rates and bond yields could remain lower for an extended period of time. And we're talking decades, not months or years. So, and then you might say, well, why would that be?
Yeah.
Here are two reasons why I think interest rates could stay lower for a lot longer. And one is demographics, and two is technology.
So you've got an aging generation, there's a transfer of wealth to a younger generation.
That's right, and you've got fewer working age people and a much larger number of retirees. That's a drag on growth. Obviously, people spend the most money in their life, you know, in their 30s and 40s and stuff like that. When you're when you're in your 60s, 70s, 80s, you're spending a lot less. So that's a drag on growth. But that's obviously here to stay. You know, demographics don't change much at all. And then technology, you think about things like automation and how that's disrupting various forms of employment. That's only going to continue. Driverless cars, driverless trucks, if and when they arrive, that's going to disrupt employment. And also what we call the capital intensity of technology businesses. If you think about all the businesses today which are growing, like a Facebook and an Alphabet and Amazon, they're relatively less capital intensive, meaning
they start in the garage.
That's right. They start in the garage. They build their businesses in software. The nature of software is, you know, the marginal cost of production is zero. Like, you can copy paste, doesn't cost you anything. You can transport software around the world. It's free because of the internet. So it requires just less money. So less demand for money also is a downward pressure on interest rates. And again, that's a dynamic which is not going away anytime soon.
And obviously the context for that is like the Industrial Revolution, the previous revolution where it was very capital intensive, the demands for money incredibly great. Inflation was the primary thought yeah. of anyone that was in a position of influence such as a central bank. So that's a vastly different set of circumstances.
Totally. And they're all happening at once. Yep. You know, you're getting hit with the aging population during this, you know, software revolution that doesn't require much capital. And if you, you know, read the you know reports from central banks all around the world, their biggest challenge today, strangely enough, is they cannot create inflation. And they're trying as hard as they can, and yet the deflationary pressures are still there. And so, you know, if interest rates do remain lower for longer, I mean, this has some profound implications yep. for all asset prices and including equity prices.
So, and you could make a case that we're only 10 years into this because the ground zero was the GFC. So we've got a long way to go. How do you put together an investment thesis along these lines in that case?
Well, I think, you know, at the end of the day, investors still want to think about, you know, how can you compound your wealth over the very long term? Yep. That's where you should always start. And for us, it's still all about, you know, you want to just own a handful of very high quality global companies
yep.
which are experiencing structural growth for decades, yep. you know. And you know, so these could include, you know, we own a business called Vivendi, which owns Universal Music Group.
Yep.
They're the largest record label in the world. Obviously, you see everybody walking around with their earpods in and listening to music. They're streaming Spotify or Apple Music. Well, it actually doesn't matter where they're streaming their music from. They all have to pay the record labels.
Yep.
So that's a dynamic, that shift to listening, that digital streaming of music, that's a dynamic which is only in its infancy, is going to play out for decades. It doesn't matter what President Trump tweets, it doesn't matter what happens over in China, people are going to still listen to music. And so we own a business, you know, which is Vivendi, which its record label Universal Music Group is compounding at, you know, double digits and will do for the foreseeable future.
Is that the modern analog of an infrastructure stock?
Well, it is. I mean, sustainable growth. Just if you can have confidence that your growth is sustainable, that is very, very powerful, particularly in a low interest rate world. I mean, if you think about, a lot of people have made money in bonds in the last, you know, 6 or 12 months.
Yeah.
And that's because, you know, bond prices have gone up 30-40% because the PE ratio of the bond or the price relative to the coupon has gone yep. from 40 times to 60 times or 70 times for an earnings stream, the coupon, which yep. is not growing.
Yep.
Well, instead you can buy a business like Vivendi where the earnings stream is growing at double digits and the PE ratio is less than half that of the bond, right? So that's a long-winded way of saying that there's actually an argument here to say that equities are very cheap.
Compared to very expensive safe havens such as government
Correct.
Bonds, because you're paying for that defensive quality.
Correct. And the counter-argument would be, well, how do I know that growth is sustainable?
Yes.
So for me, that's why we would say, spend your time focusing on the sustainable structural growth stories.
So Vivendi is a relatively new example of the new way that things are distributed. What are some other examples that have caught your eye?
Yeah, so we own a business in the United States called United Health. It's the largest health insurer yep. in the United States. And your viewers will know we have an aging population in Australia, but they have an aging population in the United States as well. 10,000 Americans turn 65 every single day. So, and this comes back to our demographics argument. Populations are aging all around the world, including in the United States. And this is driving structural demand for healthcare services for decades.
Yep.
Not for this year and next year, but for decades to come. So we think that, you know, as the largest health insurer in the United States, United Health, and this is also a business which is spending a lot of time and effort and money on thinking about how to actually deliver healthcare more
yep.
efficiently.
Yep.
We think they're very well positioned again to deliver a growing earnings stream for a sustained period of time, which again, in the context of this low interest rate environment, is very, very powerful for investors.
What other industries are ripe for disruption that may not necessarily have been thrown into that vortex just yet?
Ripe for disruption?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, There are a number of consumer packaged goods industries out there, especially the premium branded goods, you know, Kraft cheese, Heinz tomato sauce, which are being disrupted by private labels.
Right.
Private labels being brought out by Woolworths and Coles, or in America by Walmart and Costco and Amazon. Those businesses, in our view, represent much poorer value. There are these are businesses which are being disrupted. That disruption will go on for a very long period of time. That's downward pressure on your earnings growth. And these names are already trading at very high multiples. So again, it's the value equation in reverse. If anything, there's significant downside in those stocks versus the structural growth stories that we discussed before. We think there's a lot of upside.
So Procter & Gamble is a good example of that, and they've been an incumbent in that space for, basically since the Second World War.
Yeah.
And they're almost exactly the type of companies that you need to be looking at if they're not changing fast enough.
That's right. So they've been doing extraordinarily well, and they're a great company, no question. But from this starting point today, they've got pressures from private label at the same time as their valuations are really elevated. There are just better opportunities elsewhere.
Andrew, we could talk for a lot longer, and maybe we'll have to leave that to another day, but thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me.
And thanks for joining us for the Executive Series.